This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Number one story in the world is what's going on in Syria, and there are always Pittsburgh connections. Paul?
What is the Pittsburgh connection, Larry?
Well, let's start with kind of framing what's going on there for people who have heard of Syria, know there have been issues there. How does this affect me? In many ways, there are interlocking stories from the Middle East that are really important now, especially in a transition from one president to the other. Here's CBS's Naomi Ruckham.
This is the first time opposition forces have reached Damascus since 2018. And according to Russian sources, Bashar al-Assad was given instructions to transfer power peacefully. The events of this weekend have shaken the Middle East. And while many in Syria celebrate, there is great unease across the region and here in the U.S.
Celebration in Syria after the downfall of Bashar al-Assad. In just days, armed rebels took key cities before claiming the capital, Damascus.
The speed at which that unfolded was surprising, I think, to most everybody in the international community.
Russian state media outlets report that Assad and his family fled to Moscow and were given asylum. His once impenetrable palace ransacked as his country descended into a bloody, nearly 14-year civil war. Assad was propped up by Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah militants who carried out a brutal campaign of documented war crimes, including indiscriminate airstrikes and chemical weapons attacks. Overnight, dozens of Syrian migrants who fled to neighboring Turkey lined up at the border, hoping to return home.
At long last, the Assad regime has fallen.
Yesterday, President Joe Biden said it is a moment of both historic opportunity and one of risk and uncertainty as Syria pivots from more than 50 years of Assad family rule.
This process will be determined by the Syrian people themselves. The United States will do whatever we can to support them.
The U.S. military says it conducted airstrikes on ISIS targets in central Syria Sunday. Israel has deployed forces into a buffer zone along its shared border with Syria, saying it's to ensure the safety of its citizens.
And this morning, we're learning that Israeli fighter jets hit suspected chemical weapons sites in Syria. Israel's foreign minister says it's taken the preventative action to stop them from falling in the wrong hands. Meantime, yesterday, President Biden acknowledged ongoing efforts to find American journalist Austin Tice, who went missing in Syria 12 years ago. The president says he believes Tice is alive and that he is committed to returning him to his family.
CBS's Naomi Ruckham.
Larry, the situation in Syria right now is a lot more complex than you might think at first glance. The rebels do not control the entire country. There are parts of the northern border with Turkey that the Turkish government is in control of. Then you have a large area toward the eastern side of Syria that is under what they call Kurdish control. And then you have the rebel areas. And in all of that, as you just heard in the last report, there are some ISIS outposts. But for the most part, and the vast majority of the population in Syria is in the western and northwestern part of the country, you'll see that that's where the rebels are in control.
And one of the things that I have heard about those who have taken over is they are not aligned with Iran.
No, they're not. And so this is a huge setback, not only for Iran, but also for Russia. But Iran was the main instigator of trouble in Syria and was using Syria as a base to get materials and weapons to both Hezbollah and, of course, into the Gaza area for Hamas. So this is, you know, they're quite a distance away from all of that. So this is their closest landing spot. It's gone.
And from a local connection, a Pittsburgh native I know who's embedded there is working with their government. He's spent multiple deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan and working with intelligence said that he was, the crazy thing is, yesterday sends me a text with a video of what's going on in the streets. And he said, I'm walking through. And he said, you know what? All I'm thinking about the Steelers and the Browns game.
Now, what describe what you saw in the video?
Well, the unrest on the streets, and then, you know, kind of a victorious, you know, wearing the flag, and
right,
they had, you know, obviously the word got out that Assad is gone and went to Russia, and so there's a whole lot of citizens who think that after 50 years of the Assad family rule, there's going to be something different, and there is. We just don't know what exactly that'll be and how it affects all of what's going on in the Middle East, which does affect us.
I know that the president was quoted as saying that these rebels are saying the right things now, but we'll, you know, be wary about it. The commander used to be with Al-Qaeda. He used to be an Al-Qaeda commander, the leader of the rebels, but he has since moved away from that, and in recent years has been talking much less like an extremist and much more like someone who just wants to overthrow a government and move on. And so we'll see.
Coming up, the latest on the hunt for the killer of the CEO in New York City. It has expanded over the weekend, and why they're not releasing the name yet.
They do have a name, though, don't they?
They do have a name.
Yep.
But why they're not releasing it, we have that story coming up. This is the Big K Morning Show. Another story a lot of people have been following with great interest is the story of the healthcare executive, the CEO, Brian Thompson from United Healthcare, gunned down in New York City. And there is an update over the weekend and why they are not releasing the name, even though they believe they do have the name of the killer. CBS's Chanel Call in New York.
New images released by New York City police on Saturday appear to show the masked gunman inside a taxi just 20 minutes after he murdered UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. The only surveillance photos of the suspect's full face released by police were taken when he checked into a nearby hostel. Investigators say the gunman switched from a black ski mask to a blue surgical mask before taking that cab to an interstate bus terminal in uptown Manhattan Wednesday morning. After the shooting, sources tell CBS News he may have boarded a bus bound for Atlanta.
Well, it's going to make it a lot more difficult, you know, being able to track him down.
For a second day, police sent divers into this lake in Central Park after finding what they believed to be the gunman's backpack nearby Friday, but not the murder weapon. The high-profile search has now expanded across state lines with more than 80 police departments called in to assist.
I'm wondering what the role is those departments, police departments across the country will actually play in this investigation, especially given the fact that we don't know publicly the person's name who police are looking for.
Well, just because you don't know publicly who the person is, the investigators that are assisting may know, and they might have been told, hey, keep things close to your chest.
And investigators are also still trying to determine where the gunman boarded that bus that brought him to New York City 10 days before the shooting. Chanel Call, CBS News, New York.
And you know, Larry, the contents of that backpack were kind of surprising to me. It was Monopoly money.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up.
And what does that signify? What message does that send?
And the message is written on the shell casings and just this whole series. What has been remarkable is law enforcement's ability to piece all of this stuff together with different cameras from all over the city in New York.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time until they find this person. They have so much evidence and so much... they've had a tremendous, as you were just saying, that tracking his movements, they know where he was before the shooting.
Yeah, and the mayor of New York says, quote, the net is tightening, and they feel certain they know who the perpetrator is, so they'll continue.
And they're looking for him in more than just New York now. It's, I think, Connecticut is one possibility.
Right. And this story for... I don't know, for obvious reasons, it's real. It's reminiscent of one of those CSI type, you know, where there are these cop shows where everybody's trying to figure out why, what was the motive for this execution style killing of the CEO executive.
Well, if you base your speculation on what was written on the shell casings,
right,
then you would think that it's retribution of some kind. For non-payment by the insurance company, by UnitedHealthcare.
Yeah, and a lot of people are frustrated by that system, but who takes it to a point where they're going to do something as
clearly
heinous
right?
as this. Yeah, so we'll continue to follow that story, too. And other news that we'll be covering, we've got our Odyssey sports director, Jeff Hathorn, right after the news at 9, talking about the Steelers and their win over the Browns, which was a great day on the North Shore all the way around.
Oh, sure. To you, who had the standout performance? Who made the biggest difference on the defense and the offense?
Well, you know what? They kept T.J. Watt has an impact. Cam Hayward continues to have an impact. But Deshaun Elliott made most of the tackles, and people might be like, Deshaun Elliott, you don't hear his name that much.
No,
Well, I had to say his name a lot yesterday because he was making plays.
Quietly good at what he does.
And then
on offense, I think it's an easy answer. I think Russell Wilson is the one to give all the credit to because, A, we didn't turn the ball over except for that one fumble when it really didn't matter. Cordarrelle Patterson coughed up the ball, but he took really good care of the ball and completed really big passes when he had to and without George Pickens. And you know, there was a lot of speculation about Pickens and, you know, whether or not he was just kept out of the game, you know, and the hamstring was just the reason, the cover story. It doesn't really matter one way or the other. What I like is that they could do it without him.
Scotty Miller made a big-time catch on the sidelines.
That was a beautiful
and
catch.
And so did Mike Williams. So, yeah, guys contributed. What I thought was cool is after the game, I went up to Wexford, stopped at T-Bones. You know where that is?
Sure
off the
do.
Wexford exit. And I walk in, and who's the first person I see? Voice of the Pirates, Greg Brown.
Oh, cool.
So I walk up behind him. I go, excuse me, sir. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. And he goes, oh. He goes, did you just come from the game? I go, yeah. And I'm thrilled. And the reason I mentioned that is because Dave Parker.
Oh, isn't that great?
Pirate who's been waiting, what?
30 years. Almost 30, yep.
To finally get the nod that he's going into the Hall of Fame.
Just how long could they overlook such a... And he got 14 of the 16 votes on the committee.
Yeah, it's one of those where they, you know, it's been so long, it's kind of, there's a special category. But at this point...
The other day, I think it was an All-Star game, I saw a video replay of him throwing out someone from right field. On a bullet that he threw. Somebody was rounding third, going for home, and he threw him out. I just thought, that is really impressive.
Think of the right fielders the Pirates have had.
Well, I mean, you know what it reminded him of was Roberto Clemente.
I was just going to say, that arm, that level of having that kind of arms.
But it was the bat. Everybody knew it was the bat. I mean, he was a batting title guy.
Well, good for him and his family, because he's been suffering with Parkinson's, and it's come just in time for him to be able to enjoy this.
Look for him in Cooperstown on July 27th. It'll be a great day for watching the Hall of Fame induction.
Yeah, another Pirate on the heels of this summer. Jim Leland went in. So
awesome.
Now if we could get Paul Skeen surrounded by more talent, here we go. Today, I'm Larry Richard, and every Monday at this time, we check in with Brian Caranta, Secure Money Advisors. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
You know, I never asked you how you got into this particular work. I mean, why do you care about all these retirees?
Well, you probably remember catalog store, Montgomery Ward's. Yeah, so my dad had a Montgomery Ward's catalog store.
Really?
Yes, in Butler, New Jersey. And I can remember my parents doing really well, this is in the early 80s. I would work at my dad's store, and I can remember at the time things were really good. There was a very popular doll being sold called the Cabbage Patch doll, which everybody remembers.
I remember.
And there'd be lines out the door.
I remember.
Christmas. My dad's catalog store, I mean, there'd be a line wrapped around, you know, the side of the building. But I can remember the day that my dad got a call from a friend of his, and he said, Bob, he said, have you watched the news today? And my dad said, no, why? What's going on? He says, well, you should turn it on. My dad turned it on and found out that Montgomery Ward's was filing for bankruptcy, and they were going to be closing a lot of the catalog stores. This was the day of corporate raiders, and Montgomery Ward's was one of those that kind of got raided and taken over, and they wound up closing everything down. But it changed my parents' life overnight. And so, as a young kid, I can remember being, you know, in bed at night and hearing all the arguments about the money struggles and everything else. And so it impacted me hearing those arguments at night. And so I thought, if I could learn about money and understand how it works, maybe I could help my parents. And then it turned into, well, maybe I can help other people. And then I came here to Pittsburgh to go to school at Robert Morris. I thought I was going to head back home to New Jersey where I grew up. And
we snagged you.
Yeah. I thought I was going to go to work on Wall Street. Instead, I went to work for a big firm here in Pittsburgh. And 1999, went to work. And first day on the job, somebody says to me, "Hey, kid, you're going to be answering the phones." And I said, okay, I have no idea what I'm doing. I had just passed my financial exam, and I thought to myself, wow, I passed my financial exam, and I'm going to be answering the phones. So, but I was answering the phones at a tough time because the tech bubble had bursted, and of course, everybody was losing money. So I was taking a lot of phone calls from a lot of panicked investors. I want to get out of the market. Get right. me out today. I can't be in here anymore. I didn't know what to tell these people. I just passed my exam. Just because you passed your exam doesn't mean you're ready to start advising. Kind of like just because you passed your medical boards doesn't mean you should start doing heart surgery. You know, right. there's a fellowship that you need to do and things that, you know. And I had the opportunity to sit with these advisors, financial advisors that have been in the business for 25, 30 years. I would hear them tell people things like, make sure you have a well-diversified portfolio in different sectors. And as you get older, what we'll do is we'll remove some of that risk that you have with stocks and we'll put the money into bonds. And I just kept seeing people's portfolios go down. I never saw a positive return in my first year. But what changed my life is I took a call from a guy by the name of Sam. I'll never forget it. He called up. He says, I needed to get out of the stock market. I cannot afford to lose another dime because I need this money to live off of. So I go to his financial advisor, I explain the situation, and his advisor said to me, Brian, I need you to get back on the phone with him and let him know everything's going to be fine and just remind him to not worry about anything. He's in it for the long haul. So as a good employee, I went back to the phone and I said exactly that. And what this gentleman said to me next is why I'm so passionate about protecting people's money. He said, Brian, I'm 75 years old. How much damn long haul does this guy think I've got left? Which is 100% true.
Right.
And I said, Sam, what was the purpose of this money? He says, Brian, I needed it for income and I can't afford to lose it anymore. And that conversation changed my life, Larry.
Every individual's story is unique.
Yes.
To your point,
yeah.
I remember a neighbor worked for a hardware store for almost 50 years.
Yep.
And they went under. He didn't have any money.
That's right.
Through the company. So you got to make your own game plan. Do it with Brian Caranta, Secure Money Advisors. Brian, really powerful story and appreciate you sharing that.
And Larry, I'll say this. When you've won the game, you don't need to keep playing it anymore.
Amen. Hearing Brandon Rotz, I report on the traffic this morning. It has been very busy. And I noticed, Paul, on my way in, and you and I come, you're a little ahead of me, but very, very early at the end of the 3 o'clock hour into just the top of the 4 a.m., I noticed more traffic today, and I assume it's because there was a Steelers game in town, maybe a lot of people, but it's Cleveland. They could just drive.
Well, sure, and what I noticed was more trucks.
Yes.
Tractor trailers, the big ones.
It's a really busy morning that early.
And, you know, if I were driving a truck, by the way, that's the time I would prefer to be out.
Right, away from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But that trend seems to continue. And, of course, you add rain, and that's another factor that's been a big challenge. And it may be a challenge for Lenny McAllister, who encountered some traffic issues. He's going to join us in the next hour. Our resident political analyst and Donald Trump, president-elect, had a sit-down on Meet the Press. Covered a lot of issues.
He did. He touched on monetary policy, immigration, abortion, health care, U.S. involvement in Ukraine, Israel. Of course, the tariffs came up as well, Larry.
And we'll sort through some of them, but pick a subject.
Well, here's tariffs, for example. His comment, the takeaway on Meet the Press.
Tariffs are properly used, are a very powerful tool, not only economically, but also for getting other things outside of economics.
But he also said he couldn't guarantee the tariffs would not raise prices for American consumers, Larry.
Well, we'll get into more detail coming up, including what he had to say about those incarcerated due to their appearance in the Capitol on January 6th, 2001.